Welcome to FilmWax Radio, the independent film talk show. Every week we're visited by filmmakers, actors, journalists, programmers, and others to sit down and chat about the state of independent film. Owner Tekel, director of Richard's Wedding, makes a return to FilmWax Radio in time for a screening of the comedy at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. The film, which stars Tekel, Jennifer Prediger, Una Mekas, Dustin DeFay, Daryl Rosen, and Lawrence Levine, is having this one-off screening on Monday, September 24th. Tickets are now available through the BAM box office. We met in Orner's apartment in Greenpoint a couple of weeks ago, an apartment he shares with DeVoe Yates, one of Richard's Wedding's producers. We wanted to catch up, talk about his movies, which also includes Ding-a-Ling-less and The Pigs, as well as about the community of indie filmmaking, a community in which he is very passionate. This is what happened.
We'll like form a circle, and then we'll put the guys on this side and just put stack the girls on the other side, and then Phoebe and I will walk down the aisle there, and we'll say our vows like in the shade over there.
A little boring, huh?
You think it's boring? I think it's simple.
It's simple, sure, but boring. Well, it does give you an indication of what your life's going to be like.
Yeah? What's your life going to be like when you're 80 and alone on Christmas Day? Because me, I'm going to be beside my beautiful wife, surrounded by our lovely children and grandchildren, opening presents beneath the tree.
Yeah. I hate children. I hate Christmas, and I plan on being dead by 80. Mm.
All you have to do to get in the good graces of an independent filmmaker is walk up to him or her after you've seen their movie at an independent film festival and tell them that you love it, tell them what you loved about it, say that they're going to go places, and then the filmmaker will be your best friend because
they want to be loved.
Because, you know, we're all so insecure, we put our ideas out there and we're just thinking, please somebody love me, tell me that I'm good, because, you know, because when I was in kindergarten and I drew a picture, the teacher said, great job, and mom and dad threw a party and all the adults said, good job, and you're just like, you just want to keep hearing it. You know, if I ever have children, or if I ever get in touch with my illegitimate children, I'm never going to sit there and patronize them and tell them they're special, because the rest of their life, they're going to just keep seeking approval from
people. So make them strong from the start.
Make them strong. Stoicism. That's the only way to get your parents.
And eke out your own confidence and value.
Definitely. And also, you encourage them to expect things not to happen. Like if your kid's excited about his or her birthday party because it's going to be at the park and there's going to be like, you know, a clown there who juggles, let them know that, yes, the chances are good that you'll have the party at the park and then the clown will show up. But there is a chance that it'll rain or that a lot of your friends will back out and not come, and that the clown
guy, or the clown's
guy,
a pedophile.
That he'll get in a car accident on the way over there, or he'll break his wrist and he can't. It's good. You lower your expectations, I think. Anyway.
You know, Lewis was like a crystal meth addict, which is very different from Howan, and I don't think he ever shot anything up.
He's fat, though. He's a fat guy.
So?
I just thought crystal meth users were skinny.
I don't know. He's an anomaly.
It's incredible. Like, he had everything at one time, just lost it all immediately. I like hearing stories like that, actually.
Why?
This makes me feel better about myself.
Lewis failing in life makes you feel better about yourself, too, now?
Yeah, because I compare my life to his, and I think, okay, my life's not so bad. It's like I used to like going to the beach with Lewis because he's fat, and I look better with my shirt off sitting beside of him, you know?
Maybe if you spent a little more time comparing yourself to successful people and striving to be like them, you'd be more successful.
That's not going
to
make me more successful. I'm not successful, and I probably never will be, because I'm not motivated by money. You know?
But you're always talking about money. You're always complaining about not having
it. You don't have
it.
That much money. I mean,
I know. I don't complain about it, though.
You know. I always thought, I mean, I love that, you know, I can kind of, I've made a couple of movies, feature films, a few of them that are pretty decent and a few of them that aren't so good. And I've done like a children's book that's not so good. And I think my next one's going to be better. But I always wanted to do a graphic novel so badly because I think, you know.
You should. You're perfect.
Well, I'm trying to get to where I can be kind of find a style that's confident. But I've got a very kind of fanciful, cute style of drawing, which doesn't really work well with a graphic novel. I always thought that is someone who's truly an artist, truly can tell a story, is someone who can do a graphic novel, sequential art. And, you know, a lot of these graphic novels, they have a lot of adult kind of themed content.
For sure.
You know, they're about marriage or they're about broken relationships, and they're dialogue centric heavy. And I don't know. I just thought, man, that and the commitment to make a graphic novel and like the absolute discipline to do that. You know, a lot of these graphic novelists, mm-hmm. you know, if you've ever seen the documentary Crumb,
sure.
You could see there's a scene, and just a great scene where Crumb's drawing all these people in his past, all these ex, like girlfriends, the girls that he knew in high school, and he would talk about specific ones, saying she was nice to me. This one had BO. This one was not nice at all. We all made fun of her, and then he would speak with affection about some of the girls who were really, you know, nice to him and sweet to him. And you got the sense that he drew as a out of deep insecurity, but also it gave him power. I mean, I create just to get confidence out of it in a lot of ways. I want to express myself, but I feel like that's when I'm most confident, is when I'm involved in a project. I was talking to Alex Karpowski the other night. I'm always starting stories with, I was talking to Alex Karpowski the other night. And I was talking to him the other night, and I was complaining about how, he's like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm okay. I don't want to be one of these assholes who complain when there's nothing to complain about, which is usually the case. But my complaint now is, okay, it's great. I'm finishing up Richard's Wedding's great. We're going to be releasing it on VOD and DVD in January by Factory 25 from Matt Grady. That's amazing. I'm finishing up a new children's book called Rainstack, which will come out next year. Great. Exciting. Fun. I'm in New York. It's amazing. But I'm kind of in this transitional point right now where it's like I've got all these kind of projects that are kind of seeds in the ground. I'm like, I've just finished a new script that I'm going to try to, you know, raise money for and get that out there and work on the proposal. I'm pitching a bunch of children's books to like my agent to like try to mm-hmm. get her to pimp out and like pay. So like, you know, you wait, you got all these projects going, you've got to wait for something to catch fire, and you got to, mm-hmm. whatever's in front of you, you've got to do. I don't want to name drop David Gordon Green, but I'm going to. It's cool. David made, you know, George Washington, low budget movie, was his first movie 10 years ago. Then he made like $1 million movie after that called All the Real Girls.
All the Real
slightly
Girls.
Higher budget, Undertow, and then Snow Angels, and then his Hollywood movies, Pineapple Express, and then Your Highness, and then The Sitter. And, you know, throughout all those, well, the decade long of his career, and he's been so prolific, he's had a lot of movies that just didn't get made, that were supposed to get made, that didn't get made. And he was constantly just planting seeds and saying, look, something's, you know, some, a lot of these movies that you're trying to get made won't happen. You know, he's had his hand in development in so many projects.
Yeah, he's directed a bunch of Eastbounds.
A lot of Eastbounds, right. Eastbound and Down episodes. But the great thing is, like, after, you know, after
the Hollywood
movies.
He's coming on Filmwax Radio.
Is he going to come on? That's great. For what?
DeVoe? David Gordon Green, right? You got that all booked out, right? Okay.
Oh, to get you on, to get on Filmwax?
Yeah, he's helping.
He'll come on
Filmwax.
He can run his, he talks like nobody else. He can talk to you for, yeah. But he's just, he says he hates like the, he doesn't like doing the blogging. It's the bloggers that annoy him because it's not a big enough audience for him. He wants millions of people to hear his voice. I'm just joking around. That's not, I'm just kidding. But here's the thing. But here's the thing about, here's what's so admirable about David is, you know, the fact that the last three movies he's made have been big Hollywood films. And immediately, you know, as he, I think, tries to get other bigger projects off the ground, he's going back and doing smaller movies again, you know, and not just, and anyway, like to go take a step, not down, but like he loves the filmmaking process so much. So it's like, okay, let's try to get a $50 million film off the ground, another $20 million film off the ground here, another star attached to this one. And you've got a bunch of things out there. And I haven't learned that. So many years, I would have one project that I would kind of focus on, and like I would just assume, try to raise money for, I remember for 2 years I tried to raise a movie for a vampire post-apocalyptic film called Infected. And for years, you know, I had a couple of producers involved, and they showed it to supposed actors like Sean Astin or Martin Landau, and they liked it, and other stars were attached, and it was being sent to studios. And I was so naive, I just thought, oh yeah, of course this is going to happen. But the way to do it is, yeah, that's good. Do that. Get your script out there.
And then,
get
but you're moving on already. And then you're already moving on to the next thing.
And then once that is out there, get something. And I feel like I'm kind of, I want to take that approach now. Is like, okay, with this new script that I've written, The Misogynist, which I don't know if it'll get made, but like, okay, to get a proposal together, try to raise a little bit of money, more money than I've ever raised before, get it out there, go for it, and then try to get some other things going. For me, like, you know, the children's books and those projects, and like DeVoe, who's producer of Richard's Wedding, we're, you know, we've got a little illustrated book we're working on. There's a lot of different projects, but I want to get a lot more possible film projects kind of going too, in the same vein of, you know, like the Hollywood system, which is like make, have whatever 50 movies in development, make 20 of them, know that half of those movies are going to flop, and there will be one or two behemoths that make a ton of, make billions, millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. Anyway, DeVoe, we've told DeVoe, who's in the back room, to yell out, he's, boring.
He's not doing, his one designated job.
Wait, you thought what? I fell asleep. DeVoe fell asleep during that whole thing. Were you really falling? Were you sleeping?
No.
Do you want to come talk to us? All right.
Richard wouldn't want anybody to know this, but when we were in college, I loaned him money to pay for an abortion. Twice.
Same abortion twice or two separate abortions?
My ex-wife, my soon-to-be ex-wife, she is actually trying to sue me for having talked her into an abortion. Like,
really?
Years ago. Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, she says I prevented her from having a child, so now she's trying to collect child support for the child she never had.
All right, Adam.
Yes.
You're very good at Richard's Wedding. You had never acted before. Adam Chartoff plays the character of Andrew in Richard's Wedding. I remember, you know, we met at the BAM Film Festival 2011 at the Septian screening. You and I instantly clicked. I remember I was having a reading for the script reading was at Andrew Krukoff's house, who he's one of the executive producers of Sun Don't Shine. He was one of the executive producers on Septian. He gave us approximately half the budget for Richard's Wedding, which is not a ton of money, but enough to make the movie happen. Plus, I didn't want to spend a lot of anybody's money, because chances are they're not going to get it back. Although I keep telling Andrew there's a chance she will, and he should. I mean, budget's so low, but you know,
this thing could take off in Japan. Like,
Japan's,
you know,
going to be huge. It's going
to
be
We need to like make sure that Matt Grady goes to Tokyo
Grady's
and
huge
promotes
with
this stuff.
Asians love him. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves Matt Grady.
Next time,
Everybody wants a piece of Matt Grady. He made a deal with the devil, and that's why. Anybody who does sign a contract with Factory 25, this is the truth, although Matt Grady won't want to admit this, is you do have to sign in your actual blood. It's really... DeVoe's yelling boring. Okay, fuck you. It's because, you know, or whatever. I guess I'm in New York and I'm trying to be edgy and I'm just being lame. I know I'm lame. Alice Karpovsky told me too when I went to the LA Film Festival with Red Flag. We were talking last night or whenever the fuck. I'm sorry for.
That's okay.
We are
on interweb radio.
Okay, that's true. But every time I do an interview now, I think about my older brother, Oof, who like. Says he listens. She's following all the stuff that's going on. And
he'll be disappointed.
Well, he's a really good public speaker, and he speaks really well. Oh, and he's really.
And he thinks that's lazy speaking when you just throw in.
Thinks I sound like a madman, idiot, lunatic who has no self-control or no couth.
Well, everybody thinks that. What do you mean?
But that's okay. And Alice Karpovsky was no different. I said, so we went to Red Flag, and like I think Teddy Banks was there. Teddy Banks did the score for Red Flag, and he did the score for Tiny Furniture. You're falling asleep
there,
too.
No, I was kidding
around.
Okay,
fuck that.
No.
Listen, the bottom line is, Alex, anyway, this is boring.
Alex, who, by the way,
I went to the LA Film Festival. I was there for 3 or 4 days, and I changed my flight, and I stayed on for the rest of the for the rest of the festival, and then I like partied my ass off for like 10 days straight, mm-hmm. and I, you know, at the time, it wasn't like it was the right. I was watching movies and you know rubbing elbows with film. I had a great time. And then Alex is telling me that was like it's like a not like, you know it's not it's a kind of a trashy thing to do. It's kind of like not respectable.
I see. Go in.
Like
do
it's
your
like
business.
You have it's like
it's
makes
business
you it makes you look like
business.
You have nothing better going on. Well, why am I? Would I try to put on airs like I have something better going? Actually. I haven't had a vacation, it feels like, in 10 years. It was the first time I felt like I could really seriously do something for a set period of time without, like, agonizing over something creative that I've got to do. Not that I feel like the world needs any bullshit creativity that I need to put out there, mm-hmm. but I need to do it. And I feel mm-hmm. like I have a hard time going through the day without feeling enormous guilt without having worked on something creatively.
That's not a bad
lot,
it's an ethic.
That's typical.
That's
kind of
part of an ethic, though.
Yeah,
that's not,
right.
That's not like...
Of a work ethic of artist, right?
Yeah.
Snap! Oh. He fucked you up, dude.
You goddamn right I'm Republican. Oh, he fucked me up so bad. You know, you goddamn right I'm a Republican. And you know what? If you had a gun to my head, I wouldn't convert.
Yes, oh, right. If they gave you enough money, I bet you
It's all about money. You would totally convert.
Well,
you'd be a Democrat
convert too if the price was right.
Convert to what?
Republican?
Yeah.
For money?
Yeah.
Pay me money to... No, I would never do
it. I don't believe that. If someone said he has $1 million, vote Republican, you'd do it without betting on
it. No, of course not. I wouldn't do that. I don't want to be rich.
I agree with Russell on this.
Well,
thank you.
Oh, come on. You know, you wish you could afford to buy a decent pair of shoes.
Ouch. I hate it when people say, ouch. But that's bullshit because, okay, maybe I wish I made a little bit more money so I could go on dates again with hot bitches who just are, you know, that kind of thing, because I don't really have that kind of money. But I don't want to be rich. And I never have.
You said yourself earlier today you wish you had more money.
Yeah, a little bit more money. Sure, who doesn't? But I'm not the kind of person who disowns my cousin just because he owes me a few dollars, okay?
Who's your cousin?
I feel like when you're engaged in a conversation with someone, like if you're in a regular conversation with someone, having coffee, having a beer, you're not sitting there thinking, God, you know, unless you're on a first date or you're trying to impress someone, you're not, I'm not thinking, or I hope I'm not thinking, oh man, how do I sound? Right. Do I make this sound smart?
Like, well, yeah, you're always, when you're on guy. A, sure, when you're
and
on.
And so in an interview, the same way, it's like, I just feel like, okay, how would I just want to be myself, basically. And I tend to, when I'm myself, when I get nervous or I get, you know, it's a very stream of consciousness, just kind of
go for it.
Alicia Vancouvering broke it down one day. She said, wonder the reason why you do this, and then she told me why. This is what it means. This is your personality type. And it sounded really good what she told me, but I don't remember what it was.
she's a past guest on this
show. She had a great interview. I didn't listen to the interview.
I'd love to
have
her back.
She talks very well and has never had a loss of thoughts or
she's eloquent and thoughtful. But you know, really there is something to being entertaining, to being spontaneous, to being engaging, and you fall under you provide all those characteristics. So
I remember I should probably try to be more professional. I remember an investor one time who did end up writing me a small check in North Carolina to make a movie. It was either Ding-a-ling-less or The Pigs. Both of them made no money. But he said, you know, I was like, read the script. Let's talk about the script. It's going to be great. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. It's going to be interesting. And he's like, I don't care about the script. It's you, you know. I'm investing in you. You know, you as a person excite me. I want to have a relationship with you. I want to go into business with you. When things take off for you, I want to be part of it. Now, that was a long time ago.
You haven't heard
things
from
didn't,
him.
Well, no, it's nothing. There's nothing to invest in. It's a bad investment. I was working on the proposal today for The Misogynist, and it's like, it'll be edited and whatnot, and people will tell me that what to take out and what to do and whatnot, and they'll be right. But I'm very cheeky about the fact that you shouldn't invest in an independent film, at least mine. But you know what's exciting?
Where's DeVoe? Where is he?
But here's what's exciting. I was talking to Laura Herberton, Heberton, who is a producer of Gaby, and I was talking to Jonathan.
And she's also, by the way, producer of the new Matt Porterfield film.
Oh, right. I used to be darker. When is that going
to
be finished?
I don't know. Well, but Matt will be on shortly. He's booked.
It's going to be finished soon,
Matt's,
then.
I assume, and otherwise I don't know why
he's
not
playing in New York.
Come on to the show. No, he's not at the New York Film Festival.
Did you interview him for Putty Hill?
No.
Did you see Putty Hill?
Yes.
What did you think of Putty Hill?
I enjoyed it very much. I'm a big fan of that film.
Are you really?
I did the DVD release party. You were there.
I didn't go to the release party of that.
You were there.
No, I didn't go to that.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of the Septian one. You didn't come to the Putty Hill.
I came to Septian, yeah. I want to see Putty Hill. I don't know why.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, why haven't I seen Putty Hill?
I have a copy.
God, it just reminds me. I remember seeing the trailer for it. It reminded me of something that Jason Banker and Jorge Torres would do, who they directed. They were the DPs of Richard's Wedding, because it's about like these youth who kind of have no direction, right?
Or is that not true? That sounds more like a Harmony Korine film to me. But
well, their movies kind of have a Harmony Korine.
No, it has that element to it, but it's about some young adults who are like, one's leaving town and they're in searching for their baby daddy kind of thing.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And it's like outside of Baltimore or something like that.
That's cool. I mean, it's critically lauded.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
People loved it.
Well,
right?
It's like one of those early films that are like, you know, a lot of people thought was documentary, but it's there.
I'm intrigued by the title. I Used to Be Darker.
Yeah, me too. That's about, you know what it's about, right?
No.
It's about a couple who are divorcing, and they have I guess somebody in their family's visiting and staying with them. They're musicians, the couple that are divorcing, and they have a child. And so it's sort of their period of time when they're about to separate. And I guess they're trying to do it in a way that's not so difficult for the younger folks who are living there.
I thought it was about someone who's getting a pigment transplant.
So I think that the expression refers to probably their mood.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you with the camera. What do you think friendship's all about?
Oh, yeah, friendship's about love and honesty and all that shit.
How about you? What do you think friendship's all about?
Humanity.
Christ.
Christ can be your friend.
No, I mean Christ, like Jesus.
Jesus can be your friend, too. He's
No, I mean fuck. Friend. Like, for fuck's sake, yeah, we are talking about humanity again.
Russell.
Kristen.
Well, what do you think friendship is about?
It's easy. It's about tolerance.
Oh, please.
You might be the most intolerant person in the world.
Well, you know, I'm talking more about religion here. I mean, I know I may be a conservative fuck, but I've always thought organized religion is bad for business.
Okay, we got it. Friendship is tolerance. Thank
Just
you, Russell.
Same.
Excuse me. Richard's Wedding had its theatrical in New York at Rerun back in June, right?
June 1st through the 7th. We had a rerun.
Right. And it was one of the last theatricals there under the...
Under the Aaron Hellis dictatorship. He pretty much rolled in, he dictated everything that was shown. He wouldn't, if he didn't like you as a person, you didn't get it. Aaron Hellis is probably the worst thing that could have ever happened to the independent film scene in New York. That, of course, you can only say something like that if it's completely not true. I love Aaron Hellis, and I only say that because I do love him.
Anyway,
we showed it at Rerun, but I wanted to talk about this. When you and I met at BAM, you came to the reading that we had at Andrew Krukov's house. I am so ADD these days.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the problems having a lot of projects going on is you're all over the place. You're just kind of...
Okay.
Flustered. But here's the thing. But you came to the reading. You read the role of Richard because we needed someone. I was never planning on casting you as Richard because...
You
hear that bubbling?
Time.
Is it? Should we wait for it to stop?
So, wait, you even knew then, you're saying, that you weren't going to cast...
I wasn't going to cast you as Richard. I didn't know if you could act. I know you were a good guy, and I knew you were a nice person. I know I liked your company. But I didn't know that you could act, but I needed someone to read for Richard, and you came to the initial reading, or the second reading, and read for Richard, didn't you?
Let's see if I can remember. I remember coming and reading for Richard you called or emailed me the day that you were having the reading. You emailed me the PDF of the script,
mm-hmm.
and then I showed up, and I think that's what happened. And then by the end, you were like, I don't know this, you know. And then subsequently, you said you invited me back to read for Andrew.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the difference. You emailed me after the reading, and it was a fun reading, right? And people reacted well, and it gives you a lot of bravado. When you get a bunch of actors together and you have a reading, you get confident. That's the point. Like, people, you discuss ideas, and you hear what works and what doesn't work. And then, of course, everyone makes you feel good about it because that's the way people are, and they clap, and they say, great job, and this is going to be good, and they, whatever, you need that, confidence. But you send me an email the next day, and this makes a huge difference, saying, Warner, great, give me a role, let me play Richard, let me play Richard. You were championing for the role of Richard.
All right, maybe I did.
I remember getting an email like that. I mean, it could be exaggerating your enthusiasm, but it was like, I would like to do this, give me a shot at this. Bottom line, though, you said, give me the role. I wasn't sure. I needed to cast someone a little more seasoned. Larry was great. Larry Levine was amazing. And Andrew Krukoff, who was the executive producer, was initially supposed to play your character.
Right.
He didn't like coming to the rehearsals, and he also didn't feel like he was getting it, like he could do a good job with it. So he dropped out, thankfully, and we laugh about this. He's not an actor. I don't think he wants to be an actor. You got to kind of... You know, you got to be kind of like willing to put yourself in front of the camera and be comfortable, you know. He hasn't done it yet. I'm sure at some point he'll maybe want to give acting a shot. This wasn't the project for him. He dropped out, and then immediately it was like, yeah, of course, Chartoff would be great. Not only because, you know, you did a good job in the readings and everything, but it was a smaller role. Also knew having you on set just would be good. It would be, you know, you want to surround yourself with people that you're comfortable with, to have a good time
with.
Well,
for sure.
David Gordon Green talks about that. He wants to make movies with his friends. He always talks about
that. Glad it turned out the way it did because I mean, as good as Larry is in the role of Richard, it's not like where the laughs are. And I did enjoy being able to show and to sort of flex that muscle because I Now, I haven't been in a film, but acted, but to do comedy even was that much more of fun to pull off.
And
but that was also because of the ensemble too. It was.
You get really big laughs. No, you have really, really big laughs. Your deliveries are kind of uncannily good in some of the scenes. You know.
Well, if we're gonna have a wedding ceremony, it's probably best that we speak of the Holy Spirit.
No, it really isn't.
Oh. No, if Lewis wants to talk about God, he's going to talk about God.
Okay. Just don't talk about Jesus. No Holy Ghost. No Holy Spirit. I'm not a Christian.
I'm not either.
Right, that's my point, actually.
You're not Christians?
No.
Why not?
Oh, God.
Yes, praise God.
See, this is exactly why I'm not into religion. It just screws everything up.
Are you smoking a joint?
No.
Is it raining? Did I just feel a drop?
And who are you?
Oh, hey, I'm Taco.
Taco, like...
You like the taco?
Hey, everybody. Hey, everyone.
Hi.
This is Ling Zi.
Lindsay.
Ling Zi, right.
It's just Lindsay. Lindsay.
Just Lindsay?
Yeah.
This is Lindsay, everyone.
Hi, everyone.
Man, thank you, owner Tracal. Well, you'll come back right before. We'll bring you on and before the VOD DVD.
We're going to do something really cool with the DVD because we want to get people to buy them. So we're going to do this really cool.
It's a novel idea.
Illustrated graphic novel.
Wow.
It's called The Marriage of Richard and Phoebe. And it's going to be like a 100-page graphic novel with like 400 pictures and all this funny text. And it's kind of like how they met and how they fell in love. Everything leading up to the last 10 or so pages of the book, which is about the wedding, which is kind of referenced in the
movie. So there'll be a cartoon version of me?
There'll be a cartoon version of you at the end.
Yeah.
There's one thing where it says all her friends came, all of Phoebe and Richard's friends came, and there's a little picture of everyone. But the key is going to be when you get people to buy the movie and buy the book and have something collectible
about
it. So every book, well, you'll get the book. You have the option of buying like the book with a little illustration from the book, an original illustration like taped in the book.
Right.
Or something. Anyway, we're talking about this way too
early. And we're gonna have a FilmWax hosted DVD release party.
Is that true? We're going to do that?
Yeah.
Well, that's a great idea.
Propose that. Yeah.
I think that's an awesome idea. You're doing so great. I really admire. I like seeing that write up in IndieWire about you saying one of the people we love about indie film, Adam Shartoff. That would have been kind of humbling, right?
Yeah. You know who facilitated that?
Who?
Jonathan Lasecki. Thank you, Jonathan. You know, this is my public.
Lasecki. You know, he talked about me for 5 seconds, and he talked shit about me when you interviewed him.
He's always
him.
Doing that, though.
No, he did it in playful
way. He does it just.
But, man, I love that guy. I love Jonathan Lasecki. He's just terrific. Fun, sweet, so sharp, just so witty.
Too much for his own good. But he is, yeah, he's...
Well, he needs to have a couple of failures to humble him a little bit. Hopefully he will.
No.
He'll fail at some point. And it'll be good for him. Everybody needs that because he's a little too cocky right now.
More editing work.
And I normally never...
I'm so entertaining you because I'm creating so much work for myself. But anyway,
September 24th, the BAM screening at the BAM. Richard's wedding is showing at BAM. We're honored. I'm honored that they're showing it there. Florence programmed it with
Almanzotti.
Another gentleman who's Matt. Is that his name? Who's one of the programmers there? Hopefully we'll have a nice little crowd. If there's 20 people in the audience, that'll be...
Come on.
20 more people who
didn't
see the movie.
Don't put that out there.
You know, but that's... I'm cool with that. Again, low expectations going back to like, okay, wow, you idealize... If I was 28 I was showing a movie at BAM or in New York, I would think, it's going to be packed and my life's going to change. And then now you think, okay, just whatever you expect, maybe half full, maybe 35% full, lower it by another 20%. And that's a good, healthy... kind of thing to expect, and then if it is 35%, then you'll be pleasantly surprised. It's such a boring way to be, like, you know, like, oh, you're such a downer. You're not like, be optimistic, but that's not optimistic. It's just like, okay, great, I'm excited. It's a BAM screening. Let's end this, please.